Hey, Weird Fam. It's the Morbid Makers, Krista and
Jamie.
Today we're going to tell you the morbid tale of the hippie trail killer. And to go with it, our craft, if you go over to our YouTube channel or to morbidmakers.com, you can learn how to make the sunflower wreath that goes with it. But let's get into our tale. From the mid-1950s, when those from the subculture were called beatniks, to the late 1970s, when they became known as hippies, many young Americans traveled the hippie trail. When traveling the U.S. in a psychedelic van became boring, they found themselves traveling to Europe for more adventure. And they found themselves on the hippie trail. The trail normally began in London, Copenhagen, West Berlin, Paris, Amsterdam, or Milan. The travelers headed southeast towards Istanbul. From there, the trail varied, but generally it ran through Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, and Nepal, with some routes going all the way to Thailand.
These Western tourists flocked there for enlightenment and adventures.
Or cheap drugs.
Yes.
I mean,
either way, they were looking for a good time as cheaply as possible. The travelers would normally hitchhike, but the locals took every advantage of the tourism. They set up cheap bus companies and offered services for gurus to be tourist guides. The guidebooks were also published.
And for you who were lucky enough to always have the internet, guidebooks gave us all the info we needed. Where to eat, stay, what to do, etc.
Yep, those guidebooks were hippie friendly. They had information of where to score drugs, how to recoup some travel expense by donating blood. There was even a place in Afghanistan, which is now a level 4 do not travel destination, where you could get stoned by taking a deep breath in the streets.
It's crazy that Afghanistan in the 50s and 60s when it was embracing Western lifestyle and was actually quite liberal. Modern buildings were constructed in Kabul, but in the 70s that all ended with coups, invasions, and civil wars, which are still going on today.
It's sad, but during the hippie trail, people were able to travel there and was a big drug stop at the time. But the political unrest in the late 1970s in many countries along the hippie trail caused fewer and fewer people to make the trip. This unrest, especially in Iran, where they were having a revolution, and Afghanistan, which the Soviet invaded, combined with the decline in enthusiasm for hippie counterculture in the U.S., closed the hippie trail for good.
Yeah, but the hippie trail, while it was still running, wasn't all sunshines and rainbows, especially for those fortunate enough to encounter Charles Sobara. Again, this is going to be a name that's really crazy to pronounce, so just give us a minute with it. Especially those traveling in Southeast Asia. Let me get myself together. I'm sorry, guys. Charles was born as, okay, get ready for this name because I know I'm going to butcher it. Hachand Baronani Guru Mukha Charles Sobaraj. Yeah, so we're just going to call him Charles because I'm definitely not going through that again. He was born in 1944 in Saigon, which at the time was part of French Indonesia. His father was Indian and his mother was Vietnamese, but he was raised by his mother and his mother's partner, who was part of the French army. He lived his life shuttling between Indochina and France until he found himself in jail in 1963 in Paris for burglary. While in jail, he made friends with Felix D. Can you help me with this, Jamie? Yeah. Another French name. A wealthy prison volunteer, which he moved in with after his release, having to switch from being a streetwise criminal to one that fits in Paris high society. He proved he was a manipulative con man, able to charm anyone he came in contact with.
He was a thief and a con man before he became a serial killer. The hippie trail killer was not the only nickname Charles received, but he was also called the serpent, which is due to the fact that he was able to dodge authorities.
That lasted until 1970 when he married already pregnant Chantelle Pagnon. I really don't like these names. They're killing me. And what's sad is I've tried to practice these names. I'm just not getting them. Together, they traveled to Asia on stolen passports and paying their way by robbing tourists. Once they arrived in Asia, Charles began car smuggling and armed robbery. He was arrested on several occasions.
Yeah, but with his ability to charm and con people, he was able to misuse the trust of those around him to escape. He would feign an illness in order to be taken to the hospital where he would escape. For example, in Kabul, he drugged a guard in the hospital and simply walked out of the hospital. His last jailbreak from there, he fled to Iran, leaving his wife behind. She had to return to Paris as she had no money or support.
That's so sad, but it definitely did not seem to bother Charles. As he spent the next couple of years on the run, moving between Eastern Europe and the Middle East, accompanied by his half-brother. They were caught in Athens, though, but Charles switched identities with his half-brother and escaped the police again, leaving his half-brother to be tried and sentenced to a 2 years and 10 months jail. 10 months in jail.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he only cared about himself.
Of course.
Using and then deserting anyone that trusted him. Around 1975, he met up with Ajay Chowdhury, a young Indian man. I'm not sure how long they were traveling together, but in Thailand, in 1975, Charles and Ajay committed Charles' first murder. The victim was Therese Knowlton. She was from Seattle, just trying to make her way through the hippie trail. She was found drowned in a tidal pool in the Gulf of Thailand. She was wearing a bikini. Just keep this detail in mind. It will come up again.
Listen, it's been tongue twisters throughout this whole podcast, so we really appreciate you guys. Mm-hmm. The next victim was a young nomad named Vital Hakim, whose burnt body was found on the road to the Pattaya Resort, where Charles and his growing clan were staying. Dutch students Henk Bentanja, 29, and his fiancée Cornelia Himker, 25, were invited to Thailand after meeting Charles in Hong Kong. They, like many others, were poisoned by Charles, who nurtured them back to health in order to gain their obedience.
And as they recovered, Charles was invited by his previous victim, Hakim's French girlfriend, Charmaine Carou.
Mm-hmm.
She had come to investigate her boyfriend's disappearing. Fearing exposure, Charles and Chowdhury quickly disposed of Cornelia and Hink. Their bodies were found strangled and burned on the 16th of December, 1975. Soon after, Charmaine was found drowned and wearing a similar styled swimsuit to that of Charles's earlier victim, Tessa Knowlton. Although the murders of both women were not connected by investigators at the time, they would soon later earn Charles a nickname, the Bikini Killer.
So now he has two nicknames, the Bikini Killer and the Serpent.
Yes.
And then his final nickname, which would be the Hippie Trail Killer. So yes. This man, like his many sides, he has many names.
Yes.
Though he continued his murder spree, killing Israeli scholar Avani Jacob to obtain his passport, he murdered, his murder of the two Dutch students, which were the beginning of his downfall. Then Herman Kippenberger, a Dutch diplomat, and his wife began investigating the murders of the two Dutch students. During the investigation, he was allowed to access... Oh my goodness. He was allowed access to enter Charles's apartment at the time, where he found the victim's passports, poisons, and syringes.
So Charles was still on the move, however. His next stop would be Malaysia. This is where he would murder Jean-Luc Solomon. He poisoned him during a robbery. From there, he moved to New Delhi with two accomplices, Barbara Smith and Mary Ellen Ether, where he met up with a group of French postgrads. He attempted to drug them, but got the doses wrong. Some of the students were able to overpower him and hail on to him while they contacted the police.
After the police came and took him into custody, both Mary and Barbara confessed, and Charles was charged with the murder of Jean-Luc. After his trial, he was sentenced to 12 years behind bars for the two murders. He also had a warrant out for arrests in Thailand, which was valid for 20 years, which, if he was convicted, would get him the death penalty. So as his sentence was due to end on March 1986, he threw a big party for his guards and fellow inmates. He drugged them with sleeping pills and walked out of the jail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this man, he just walked out of everything.
Yes. So this was to escape the Thai warrant. When he was apprehended again in Goa, his prison term was extended by 10 years. This is exactly what Charles wanted, as when he was released, the Thai warrant would be invalid. When his sentence was up, he was able to return to France. Charles retired to a comfortable life in suburban Paris.
Mm-mm.
He hired a publicity agent and charged large sums of money for interviews and photographs. He was said to have charged over, in U.S. dollars, $15 million, equivalent to $20 million in 2019, for the rights to a movie based on his life.
Which is crazy to me. He should not be able to do that.
No.
At all. At all. But wait, he'll get his. Because on September 2003... Charles was spotted by a journalist for the Himalayan Times in a casino in Kathmandu, which is where he was still wanted. The journalist followed him for 2 weeks and wrote a news report in the Himalayan Times with photographs. The Nepal police saw the report, raided the casino, and arrested the blissfully unaware Charles, who was still gambling. According to the newspaper, Charles had returned to Kathmandu to set up a mineral water business. The Nepal police reopened the double murder case from 1975 and got Charles sentenced to life imprisonment by the Kathmandu District Court on August 20th, 2004, for the murders of Bronzinch and Kareri.
So Charles was never convicted of the most of the other slaying. Today, he is 75, suffering heart problems, and trying for one last gambit at freedom because of his age. This story has so many twists and turns with a lot of details. It is crazy that he was able to get away with so much.
It was crazy. It is crazy that he got away with so much. And with all the details, like, this is probably a story that you're probably going to be like, I need to look this up. Because it's kind of like, if you don't know it all, you kind of, it's hard to keep up with a little bit.
Yes.
So, it's pretty difficult.
It is. And I mean, people still backpack through, like, Asia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's still possibly an element of danger out there, but I'm not backpacking through Asia.
Nope.
No,
definitely not. No. Not these mm-hmm. days. Well, actually, nowadays, but even before COVID, I mm-hmm. wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
So, I don't like it. Don't like it.
I had a friend, she went to China because she was doing the China Great Wall Marathon.
Okay.
And she's like, oh, we'll just stay in hostels. No, I didn't go, but she went with some other ladies, and I'm like, but it was in her budget to stay in a decent hotel, not break the bank, but she chose to do hostels and just do that. I'm like, no.
Not gonna lie, I did hostels when I went to England. But, I mean, I was also a teenager, but it was also, we stayed with a group of people, so we knew who were in our rooms, mm-hmm. and the only people that had access to the room, besides the staff, was us, you know, me and my mm-hmm. friends.
This was probably like 8 years ago when she did that.
Oh, no. This was like early 2000s. Well, old now.
Charles, he was, well, iconic people.
Yeah. And you never know who you're going to run into. You never know who your neighbor is, like, for real. Like, you never know. Like, because he seems so nice. He was able to get the trust of so many people and steal from them and get their passports and obviously ending up killing a lot of them.
Yeah.
But they didn't know what was coming.
Yeah. And then, legitimately, he's like, oh, I'll get a publicist, and now if you want to talk about me, let's interview me for a fee and make movies and books and whatever he's doing. And that's, he just still at it, even.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
crazy.
It is crazy. But I am glad he's in jail for life, because when I was first reading about this story and they said that he was released
mm-hmm.
and sent back, and he was able to be sent back to Paris to live,
mm-hmm.
that blew my mind. And it just makes you think about a lot of the people that aren't in jail that should be in jail.
Exactly.
So,
I mean, he escaped jail. He's clean, of course. I mean,
where did he get the poison from?
Yeah. He had access to too much stuff.
Mm-hmm. Too much stuff. Mm-hmm. But it seems like that's the case in a lot of these jails mm-hmm. over in Europe, because those two women in the Ireland, the sister yeah. sisters.
Yeah, she had access to the knife in the kitchen.
Yeah, and they had their own keys to their jail ensuite.
I know. Crazy. I mean, oh my gosh.
Nope.
Too many freedoms in jail.
Yes. And I get it. Sometimes, like, jail, yeah, so it's supposed to be reformative, but it also should be a punishment. Yeah. You shouldn't be able to get whatever you want.
I know, but I've heard some people, like, once they, like, not life in prison, but they go and they get out, they'd rather do the crimes and go back in because they're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know they have shelter, they have meals.
Mm-hmm. They got a place to have sleep.
People they've already connected with in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like home, they're comfortable.
No. It shouldn't be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I know some people might disagree with that, but I don't think jail should be comfortable.
No. And some of these, like, federal prisons, like in the U.S., they have different levels. So you get internet and, like, mm-hmm. these nice benefits.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to pay for. Mm-hmm. You pay for, but
yes.
I'm going to get him a soap opera.
You can go off so many tangents on
yes.
this guy.
Oh, yes.
But I think.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we'd like to dedicate this podcast and the craft that we did, the sunflower, to our victims of the Hippie Trail Killer. And if you like this tale, please like and subscribe. Visit our website at morbidmakers.com, which is where you can see the craft. You can also get access to our podcast.
Yep.
YouTube, like and subscribe on YouTube. Yep. Hit the thumbs up. Put on your notification bell.
Yes, like us on Facebook, Instagram. And comment.
Yes. And we're setting up a
newsletter.
Yes. Tell them about the newsletter.
Stay in tune for that. You'll see it over on. We'll announce it everywhere. And you'll just sign up and you'll get some exclusive stuff there that we won't put out to everybody.
And you're gonna wanna get this stuff,
yes.
guys. It's actually some really cool things.
Yes, it is. And until next time,
be relentless, be unstoppable, be the weird.